Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hour. A bit of a late start today. Kind of wiped out my opening comments, but there is one that I want to make because it strikes very close to home. Before I introduce my guest, I'm sure he'll let me do this. Yesterday, a notorious former Chicago police commander was sentenced not for his crimes, but for lying about them, obstructing justice. Chicagoans who've been around a while know who John Burge is. He retired some years back a little early because he was so infamous, and he hid out in Florida. Get out of town. Maybe people will forget about what you did. Year after year, this man was an absolute outrageous racist, and he took out his hate on poor blacks that were arrested and anybody who came into his area. I mean, you think torture only happens at Guantanamo, at Bagram, and the other offshore torture prisons? Well, think again. Among other cities, it happens right here in Chicago, and Burge was very much involved in it. And he isn't the only one, except he became so infamous, there were all kinds of charges brought against him. I mean, he did the kind of stuff that goes on at Guantanamo. I'm sure he didn't do waterboarding. But electric shocks, beatings, all kinds of horrendous things to get innocent people to confess to things they never did. What did he get for that? 4.5 years. He was convicted yesterday. I'm sorry, he was sentenced yesterday. 4.5 years. Obstruction of justice and lying about what he did. Anyway, at least a modest amount of justice to an absolute. Well, we know where this guy is going one day when he passes on, if there is such a place. Anyway, John Burge should have gotten life. Anyway, my guest today is Mickey Huff. You know Mickey. Mickey is he's a professor of history at Diablo Valley College in California. But most important, he is the new director of Project Censored and of the Media Freedom Foundation. And they both get involved in investigative research, putting out real important information that you don't get unless you seek out alternative sources. And, of course, they have their annual yearbook where they publish the top 25 stories. Go to their website, and you can find the latest book. Since 2011, the top stories of 2009-10. You can just Google Project Censored or go to projectcensored.org/store. Simplest way is just Google Project Censored. My God, I've got this book. I've got a whole bunch from previous years before I ever had any connection directly or indirectly with Project Censored. When I discovered them, I said, oh my goodness, how long have these guys been around? Well, they've been around a long time, since the mid-1970s. Carl Jensen was the original founder. It keeps getting better and better every year. Anyway, Mickey, I welcome you to the program.
Stephen, thanks so much for having me back. It's been
where should we go first? I know you have to leave about 10 minutes to the top of the hour because you have a PC meeting.
Yeah, we have our quarterly board meeting.
Quarterly board meeting. Ah. Well, I hope it's warmer. Well, I know it's warmer where you are than for me in Chicago. It's sort of a mini heat wave today, Mickey. It was below zero yesterday. So it's about 10 degrees now. So it's improving.
Yeah, certainly warmer here, though not as heated as the media landscape in terms of their empty rhetoric and promulgations of violence and so forth.
Well, you've got the right term describing it, calling it managed news, which is just a kinder way of calling it propaganda. And of course, you've got the junk food news and the infotainment. I wrap it all up in one ball at times and just call it garbage.
Yeah, for lack of better terms, sometimes that's really what we resorted to, and we all know the adage "garbage in, garbage out." We just did We just did a show last week on the radio specifically about managed news, the idea of junk food news, news abuse, and also the call for media accountability. And we had a discussion with our co-authors from the Manufacturing Distraction chapter, that's the junk food news chapter in the 2011 book. And we were talking not only about the ongoing and increasing problems of the reporting of pablum and gossip and trivia as if it were real news. This past year, that would be, like Tiger Woods, the endless escapades of Tiger Woods and his harem and what's going to happen next and, oh, he can't go to the golf tournament and this and that. I mean, just endless speculation and nonsense filling the so-called public airwaves in lieu of real solid news. And then when we actually get solid, a very important story, say like this recent tragedy in Arizona, the focus is on almost anything but the actual event. And then we have endless speculation and identity politics, personalization of the issues, and any attempt to discuss the larger, cultural problems that exist in the United States with violence and the role potentially that the media and the political landscape portend toward the advocating of violence sort of is missed. And anybody that wants to try to bring that into the discussion and the call for accountability in our media and in our discourse is dismissed. And I think that's a real problem. And of course, that's something we'll be addressing more at Project Censored in the 2012 book. Of course, that's not going to be out till the fall. But we really tried to address that issue this past book, the idea of media accountability and how media frame our public discourse. So this is something that I think that is really ripe for discussing at this point in our history. If not now, frankly, I'm not sure how much longer we have really left before we totally just go off the precipice here into the bread and circus decline of empire.
Well, we really are in big trouble, Mickey, and the Arizona thing caught my attention. I wrote two articles on it, one on what did I call it? The roots of Arizona's violence. I mean, all the stuff that the major media cover is pretty appalling. The way they do it is pretty appalling. But, just talking about a loose cannon committing a violent act, I mean, that has absolutely nothing to do with what happened. The guy who pulled the trigger is inconsequential. I simply didn't care about him. He might have been a little deranged in one way or another. But the real issue is the U.S. culture, and the U.S. culture is a culture of violence. It's violent abroad.
Oh,
it's violent
indeed it
at home. Besides being gun crazy, we're a rape culture. We indoctrinate. We indoctrinate young kids, not deliberately manipulating their minds by specific instruction, but we give them violent films and violent TV shows and violent video games and this daily violence. I use Chicago as one example. In 2008, and most of this stuff never even gets a mention in the media, unless it's on page 18 and two lines or something. In 2008, there were 508 murders in Chicago alone, Mickey, and most of them were by guns.
Yeah.
So we play up one killing only because somebody prominent was involved, more than one person, but she's getting the most play.
Well,
she's still alive.
Again, this tragedy is It is mostly because of the celebrity of the figures and the manufacturing of the antagonist, the lone gunman. Notice that historical frame and what it echoes. We've routinely heard about the lone gunman and the bad apple. And you mentioned Guantanamo in the beginning when you were relating it to the gulag structure of Americans' prison system. And let's not forget, then this is something else the media don't routinely report, that the U.S. has the largest prison population, period, in the entire world. And when you look at the people that are in prison, it's a very it's a very skewed kind of sampling of certain people, people of color, minority people, males in particular, of color. what we do abroad in our foreign policies, in our gulags at Guantanamo and Bagram and Abu Ghraib, is not simply a bad apple scenario. It's a systemic matter of policy that not only we employ externally, we do it right here at home, as you illustrated, but we don't report about it very widely. Certainly the corporate media does not report widely, and the sentencing of the corrupt police official in Chicago on the idea of lying about the crimes is again another illustration that people in high places are rarely held accountable. I know the hammer did Tom DeLay in Texas recently was sentenced in a rarity where a member of Congress is a former member of Congress is sent to prison. I know Congressman James Traficant was also sent to prison for a host of crimes that he had committed. He'd been committing them for decades in Youngstown, Ohio. But ultimately, they get sort of pinned on these one or two things. And again, the media brings it out with no context. The lone gunman back to Arizona. Well, of course, that echoes clearly back to Kennedy. Just the whole phrase "lone gunman" it's like a meme in our culture that brings us back to Kennedy and the idea of, oh yeah, there was one guy that killed Kennedy. And again, I mean, the absurdity on the face of it of accepting those myths. Really shows how incurious our culture is and how we do have a systemic effort to suppress the truth. This is why Peter Phillips and I refer to this problem as an ongoing truth emergency. We live in a culture on a hyper-real media landscape where people cannot tell the difference between what is real, what is fiction, what is important or significant or substantive, and what is trivial, mundane, etc. And in our media, in particular, calls for violence are routine. To suggest that there's no culpability in our culture at large from major institutions that really promulgate positions of acceptable violence, again, is to pretend there's no culpability is madness. It paints the picture of a culture that is literally certifiable, insane. Our foreign policy is utterly jingoistic and violent to the core. We've killed over 1,300,000 Iraqis, created 5 million refugees. Where do you see those numbers reported? In the press. We see regular calls for the assassination of Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, the shooting the messenger escapade, rather than substantive discourse about what the cables reveal about our utterly insidious and nefarious policies, both domestically and in terms of foreign policy. So it isn't as though there's nothing to report. And it isn't, anybody can turn on the corporate media any day of the week and see people advocating for violence, see TV shows about violence. I mean, again, I'm not pointing the finger only in that direction. But to pretend that it doesn't affect or impact a society is again, I would say certainly far more than short-sighted. It's loony, for lack of a real a more sophisticated term. But I think it really paints the picture of how our media culture really is mirroring where we're going, if not outright pushing us further over this precipice of a civil society.
You know, Mickey, I think we're already over the precipice. We really are in dire shape, and I'm old enough to be able to reflect back to the way things were when I was growing up and in school and in beginning my working career, and America had lots of warts, which I understood better as the years passed, and I was able to look back and say, gee, my goodness, I mean, I remember all this stuff, homophobia, that I can remember so distinctly back in college, even on college campus, a school that it never should have been there, but it was. And, of course, racism, my goodness, it was almost the mid-1950s before we got Brown versus Board of Education, that the school
shouldn't
be segregated.
Which was ignored, and they had to reissue a ruling thereafter.
Oh, well, despite these rulings, of course, things are just as bad now as before that ruling ever was made. I mean, in Chicago, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, all the big cities, you've got segregated communities, you've got schools that are, 90% black or black and Latino, and others that are 95% white. Well, that's segregation.
We could easily spin off in the last two Project Censored books alone, we did stories on how schools, UCLA civil rights study showed how the schools are more segregated today than they were at Brown v. Board. And we did another one this year on how charter schools have a lot of the same failures and problems and so forth as private, as public schools. And Arne Duncan, another buddy from Chicago.
Oh, boy.
The whole idea of privatizing education, top down, Diane Ravitch, who originally supported the whole No Child Left Behind, has totally reversed her position on it and is now one of the most staunch advocates of repealing all of this madness. And another study that just came out, I think it was New York University, and I believe it was reported in McClatchy, shows that increasingly our young people, by the time they get to college, lack significantly the ability to think critically. They are losing the ability to think critically simply because they're not being taught. And this goes full circle back to our media culture. It's a two-dimensional managed culture where it's images and cultural meanings are projected, but there's no way to talk about it. There's no outlets to go. And anybody that goes on the comment forums online sees what a complete circus environment that is. We've really lost the ability to communicate with one another. We're losing the ability to think critically. As I said before, we're losing the ability to discern that which is real, significant, meaningful from that which is pure pablum. And again, you use the term garbage, rubbish. And again, back to that axiom, garbage in, garbage out.
Oh,
and I'm afraid, as Christopher Hedges has written in one of his recent books, Empire of Illusion, the subtitle of that book was The End of Literacy and the Triumph of Spectacle. Right there sums up a very serious component of our society and the directions that we're going. Dystopic as they may sound, I'm afraid they do accurately represent our reality.
You know, Mickey, I am very harsh as I look at stuff, and I spend all my time every day either writing something or on air, my own program, and a fair number of interviews. And there are so many topics that come at me, and oftentimes I'll wake up and there's something that just pops out at me that I hadn't thought about the previous day or during previous days, and it's important, and I say, I just have to say something about this. But the more I look at such a vast array of things going on, both at home and abroad, it really shows a society in very, very deep decay. We truly are in deep decay, coming apart. The middle class is well on its way to total annihilation. Our class society is more extreme than ever. Over the past three decades especially, there was a plan, and it's been implemented, to literally shift public wealth and the wealth, I use that term loosely, of most people from ones who need it just to be able to support themselves into the hands of people so wealthy they simply don't need anymore. But the wealth is simply shifting upward, and everything going on, whether it's Obama's planned austerity plan, that's bipartisan, not just Obama, but the plan isn't so much austerity, it's to rob from the poor and give to the rich. So let the corporations have all they want. Nobody ever talks about the subsidies to them, whatever else is going on. Obama just came out with an executive order that he wants to strip away. We've been deregulatorily imploded, Mickey.
Call it what it is. It's a plunder. We're talking about the plundering of public wealth and the commonwealth. And the regulatory agencies are regularly staffed with people from the very industries that they're supposed to be policing, which is a joke. We've seen it in banking. We see it at the EPA. You see it at the USDA. You see it across the spectrum, which then, of course, makes conservative cries for less government even more comical, because whenever these – and let's be honest, Obama is conservative.
Conservative.
And not conservative in a Burkean way. We're talking, maybe not the neocon face, but certainly a corporate top-down type of character, which is, of course, how he gets propelled into these positions in the first place. This is another one of those necessary illusions or myths that we like to believe about America being potentially democratic and having this the people speak kind of idea. I mean, again, this is nonsense. You know, routinely when we see polls that suggest what people want, a vast majority of Americans want us out of Iraq, out of Afghanistan, And it just falls on deaf ears. In more honest days, funny, I'm making a joke about that in the Bush years, but there was that one interview with then-Vice President Dick Cheney when he was asked about the majority opinion of Americans wanting to get out of Iraq. Cheney said, so? as in, like, big deal.
Oh,
You know, speaking of the regulatory issues and the plundering, Michael Parenti has a recent article called Banksters, Racketeers, and the Mafioso We Should Be Worried About. Very, very interesting article from January 20th. If your listeners haven't read it, I highly recommend it.
The Mafia and Me article, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Michael has a way of writing about things, very serious and significant things, dire things, but with a sense of humor, which of course is another reason I highly recommend some of his works and editorials. But, you know, not to keep harping about the violence business here, but metaphorically, the plundering of the Commonwealth is also a very violent act. It's a violent act against humanity, against civility, against civilization. Everywhere we look, we can see these things taking place around us. And then literally among the media talking head punditry, we see people from the Washington Post literally recommending that we threaten people with economic or political devastation, like in Iran. Thomas Friedman actually endorsed the killing of civilians as a military tactic in Iran. You go back several years, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting even just did a compilation of these types of public advocation of violence by media figures. You know, it includes Ted Koppel. Of course, it includes Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck. We saw last summer, Glenn Beck was literally calling for people to shoot in the head the leader of the House, Nancy Pelosi, whom he referred to as a communist. I mean, again, I suppose Glenn Beck, if it weren't such a serious problem in terms of our discourse, would be a comedy show. In any literate society, that would be, you know, sort of the ultimate irony as comedy. But unfortunately, it's comedy as tragedy in our case, where there are so many warning signs and markers along the media highways here in our culture that, as you and I have been stating here, are leading us off the precipice. Over the edge to this point where we're really not going to be able to have an intelligent, literate, cultured, civilized society. But what do we do about these issues? And again, I think that's something that we should focus on a little bit more, is what are we going to do about these kind of problems? I mean, you know, you can write your articles, we can have radio shows, we can publish books, but what we really need to do is get out and talk to our neighbors. We need to get out of our houses. We need to get out of Facebook. We need to get, I mean, this all this virtual interfacing and so forth is a potential tool and mobilization tool, but it also has incredible isolating tendencies. And I think, again, when you take a look, not anomalously, at this character in Arizona, this Loeffner character, you know, it's really a product of an alienated, in a culture of alienation and isolation, where again, all the lines of acceptable behavior and participation are blurred, and then we have endless armchair quarterbacking thereafter, speculating, well, why and how and who and what and so forth, and lone gunman, crazy guy. But as you said, 500 deaths in Chicago, you know, look, we have one of the most murderous cultures in the world here,
sure,
and both in terms of our foreign policy, certainly our foreign policy, which Martin Luther King, by the way, railed against decades ago. I know you saw the recent Pentagon propaganda managed news event where they tried to claim MLK would somehow support the wars of imperialism today. I mean, again, this is so brazen. The propaganda is so brazen. The cluelessness is so obvious in our media landscape that we really need to begin communicating with each other on intimate levels. We really need to try to reach out to people, and we really need to try to do better. We at Project Censored are really trying to do that more this year, not just with our good news chapter in the book, but we're giving the first Project Censored Common Heritage Award that is sponsored by Dorothy Anderson, and it's based on Alfred Frederick Anderson's beliefs in the fair sharing of the common heritage. And we recently announced the winners for this, so at our upcoming February 5th award ceremony in celebration of the 2011 book in Berkeley, we're going to be giving out this award. And I'm assuming that the music's going to be popping up here momentarily. for us to cut the break, but at some point here, it would be nice to talk about some of these more positive things and fair sharing of the common heritage and ways that we can rectify our incredulous poor media landscape.
Absolutely, Mickey. Maybe I can ask my studio host to dispense with the break in the bottom of the hour, unless there's something that has to be aired during that slot. I prefer just to keep going. I'll get an alert if I'm wrong. I mean, we could always do it a few minutes late. But can I get one other thing in too? Let's talk about the Heritage Awards, because that's something I know nothing about. But I want to talk about something else as well. You have a new radio program that basically is to put out the type of important information that Project Censor does, that this program does, that Progressive Radio does. These are important things. And to me, everything, change begins with people getting informed and then realizing, in plain English, Mickey, how we're being screwed. And if we don't do something about it, it's only going to get worse, not better. So get informed and as you say, interface with others and spread the word, because if people don't realize what's going on around them, they have no idea in the world that they should understand that they need to do something to change it.
Yeah, and all one needs to do, I mean, and of course this is a little self-promotional in terms of what we do at Project Censored, but, you know, to really see how vacuous in terms of content corporate media actually is, you know, go to projectcensored.org and click on our links and look at the stories. It's not just the stories that you'll see that maybe you are unfamiliar with, the collapsing of the dollar, the Pentagon being the largest polluter, the return of COINTELPRO, all of these kinds of things. But what we'll see, there are places to get independent news and perspectives on our site as well. So we really encourage people to go to projectcensored.org, to go to our links at the Media Freedom International site, to our daily independent news feeds, and take a look at these kinds of stories and just juxtapose the corporate media website stories with these real independent stories of actual news.
I guess the break is coming, Mickey. The site is awfully important because you get current information. The book, the annual yearbook, is truly extraordinary. And you read that book and you say, for people who aren't as aware as you and I are, Mickey, you read that book and you say, oh my God, you know, I've never heard of any of this when I pick up the morning paper or turn on my TV set. But again, the site will give you up-to-date information. When we come back, tell listeners about your new radio program. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back, get into that, and then the Heritage Awards.
The Progressive Radio Network, filling your day with progressive moments.
Elaine Snuffa, host producer of Evolving Ideas, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and global on the Internet. Join me each week on the Progressive Radio Network to explore the universe and our relationship to it.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
South of the border.
Hello, I'm Johnny Mueller, and I have a brand new show called The Expat Files. And it's all about living, working, playing, or retiring in Latin America. I know what it's like to buy land, build a house, start a business. I've been through it in a dozen Latin countries. So, if you're thinking about moving down, or you're just curious, be sure to listen in Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Down Mexico way.
The Progressive Radio Network is looking to expand its programming, and we are looking for your ideas. If there's a subject that you are passionate about and we don't cover it, let us know. give us a call at 646-307-4482 or email our program director, Carolee@GaryKnoll.com. That's K-A-R-A-L-E-E @GaryKnoll.com. The Progressive Radio Network, the number one forum for progressive minds.
Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one forum that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Listening to A Progressive Moment on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back on Mickey Huff. Mickey on Pacifica's KPFA in the Berkeley Bay Area near San Francisco, across Berkeley, it's an Oakland suburb, across Oakland being San Francisco's sister city. And you've got a weekly program, and tell listeners about it, because it's one that they should go to and listen to.
Yeah, Peter Phillips and I, the recent former director of Project Censored and president of the Media Freedom Foundation, Peter did 14 books of the Censored volumes. Peter and I have a weekly program. Again, we just started this about a month ago. We're doing a one-hour in the morning slot at KPFA. Your listeners can check it out online at kpfa.org. It's called The Morning Mix. We've done a show with Mike Hudson on the collapse of the dollar. Peter has done a show on immigration, ICE raids, and detentions in Northern California specifically. I just did a show on mass surveillance and state control with Elliot Cohen. My colleague and friend Dr. Bob Abele has come on and done some really great commentary and interacted with guests. We've really been able to bring a lot of the pools of independent talent that exist that are ignored by corporate media onto community radio in Berkeley. And we're really grateful for the opportunity to do that. And, you know, of course, any support we can get for that is great. We certainly encourage people to try to check it out, not to take away from the good work that PRN does. Naturally, there's a lot of good programming there at PRN. But, you know, we were sort of stumbled into this opportunity, and we are trying to do our best with it.
Well, maybe, let me mention one thing. You have a one-hour program on Thursdays. It just happens that we're on at the same time. However, number one, my program runs 30 minutes. I mean, I don't want my listeners to leave me and go to Pacifica.
Heaven well, that's forbid. Archived. They can go to the archives.
Well, both my next comment, both programs are archived, and I believe most of my listeners listen through the archives. The little bit of listening that I do is 100% from archives, because I simply don't have time to listen live. So I pick my listening very carefully, and I go to archives to do it. So they literally can hear my program entirely, and they can hear your program entirely, or they can listen to me live and then shift for the second half of your program. Dare I say that to my friends at Progressive Radio? Pick a moment, maybe archive or what, live archive, whatever, and check out your program, Mickey, because I know what you do, and everybody you mentioned, I've had on my program, Mike Hudson, Bob Abele, Peter, your co-host, you, of course, and we're on the same important topics. So this is vital information, and this is what people need to know about.
I think it's really important. Again, we're really grateful for the opportunity. And again, it's not so much to again, it's not about Peter or I talking about ourselves. It's another platform for us to, you know, create this megaphone of these undercovered, important, independent stories that just don't get covered. So our plan is to go through our books and our validated independent news stories and get as many of these voices on the airwaves, online, into the archives as possible. And we really encourage educators, people that do, you know, teaching and so on, you know, use these archives and use these types of things for parts of their classes, for critical thinking exercises. Again, I think that's really important. That's what we should be doing, not just in school, but it's what we should be doing in our communities and at large. And, you know, the media has such a powerful influence and it's such a powerful outlet. It's a terrible travesty that the abuse of the airwaves happens like it does, up to and including the recent Mondo merger of Comcast and NBC. I mean, this is madness. This is exactly what the liberals were calling for in media reform. Obama's coming in, and the FCC is going to fix it, and we're going to be it's going to be media freedom heyday. We're going to have net neutrality. I mean, this is just one more example of Obama reversing his positions. And again, it's clear indication that America is a bought place, that there is no real public input in so-called public policy. Government is an illusion, a facade, essentially, that tries to cover for the private corporate deep pocket interests that determine the policy. And again, it shows that media reform is a ruse. We need media revolution. We need, as Dave Matheson says, to be the media. We need to support each other in our independent type programming, whether it's supporting us at KPFA, you on PRN, countless other people that really do engage in this kind of work. It's really critical that we do this. And again, it's also critical that we realize all the efforts of Free Press and these groups aside who really were working to try to influence FCC, you know, this just isn't working. And the conference that they had a couple years ago in Minneapolis, it was a huge Obama fest. It was a big cry, a majority cry of how the Democrats were going to save the Internet and save media from corporate influence and so forth. And it's been exactly the opposite. So I hope people remember this. I hope people, try to shy away from their tendencies to be like goldfish. You know, the folk singer Annie DeFranco once upon a time had a piece on an album called Little Plastic Castles that I had liked to quote that really refers to, and of course Gore Vidal has talked about America being, the United States of amnesia. You know, Annie DeFranco said, they say goldfish have no memory. I guess their lives are much like mine. And the Little Plastic Castle is a surprise every time. It's hard to say if they're happy, but they don't seem much to mind. The idea that, you know, a culture with no memory of itself has no historical context, these kind of things play right in front of them, and we don't see the patterns. We don't connect the dots. This is the job of media and journalists and the free press, and they're clearly failing us. The government is not protecting the free press as a constitutionally protected principle. This latest fiasco of Comcast NBC further illustrates it. And again, anybody that doesn't understand the ramifications of the pay-to-play internet structure, again, it goes right back to this goldfish problem of no memories, back to the huge Clinton problem of the telecom bill in 1996. Again, we saw this coming. We meaning we people that are paying attention to the history of media policy, Democrats and Republicans. Again, this is a tragedy in the making. Of course, we see John, Nichols and McChesney and others decrying it and speaking out, and that's important. But the idea that you think the FCC is some kind of a vehicle for the people is, again, proven to be absurd. Back to that study I mentioned of how huge numbers of students don't learn critical thinking in college or elsewhere. That's a New York University study by Richard Arum, a sociologist there. It's riveting, the findings of this study. Again, we're here at the root, right? We're here at the root of a culture that can't tell the difference between fact, fiction, can't dissemble propaganda, cannot understand what is happening. I mean, part of the study has 45% of students showed no improvement in critical thinking skills after 2 years of study. And after 4 years, 36% showed no significant gains in any higher order thinking skills. I mean, again, this is a society on the verge of collapse. It's a culture that's long become a parody of itself. It's a real problem. So what we're trying to do with Project Censored, create more media literate students, create a more literate public in terms of politics, culture, media, public policy, etc. And we're also now trying to honor and reward people that are really working for the commons, for the common good, through this Fair Sharing of the Common Heritage Award. So I'd like to tell, you know, your listeners a little bit about that, if I could.
Oh, absolutely, Mickey.
This is first year we've done this, and the submissions, we put out a call for submissions for published articles, etc., for people that were working behind, or people that were working with economic and social theories of the late Alfred Frederick Anderson. And Anderson believed that every sentient being, human and non-human, has a right to the fair share of the material and economic benefits of the common heritage wealth. And this is in this commons, these are these things that we all have access to. They're all of ours. The earth's natural resources, land, you know, subsurface minerals, fuels, water, air, you know, as well as the public airwaves, cyberspace, the whole physical environment here, right? And the common heritage, then, the articles that we reviewed are ones that really put forward ways that we can work together to share in the commonwealth of the planet rather than destroy it, hoard it, use it against one another, and so forth. So this is something that we're honoring this year, and the widow Dorothy Anderson has provided funding for this award through the Media Freedom Foundation. We're very, very grateful to Dorothy Anderson for really trying to put forward the ideals of herself and her late husband, and we'll be doing that February 5th, and we'll have more announcements on our ProjectCensored.org website, but we'd really like more people to get involved in this and more listeners, and also to please, when submitting nominations, again, Project Censored accepts nominations from people all over the world, go to ProjectCensored.org, and if you see a story that's very significant and you think it's very, you know, very, very, very important that people need to know about and it's not being covered in the main corporate media, then please send it to us. So we can validate these stories, we can get them out on the web, we can put them in the till and the cycle for the annual book, but not just terrible news. And again, I know that it's easy for us to talk a lot about there's so many problems going on in the world and in our own country and in our own communities, but I'd like to submit that there's also a lot of positive things and a lot of good things, and I'm just as guilty, maybe more guilty than even others of the notion of, you know, always looking at, oh my, look at this, look at these problems and look at how this is falling apart. But I'm really trying to spend more time increasingly, what are we going to do about it and how are we going to do things about it in ways that we don't overwhelm each other and we rather support each other. You know, we do a whole chapter in Project Censored every year on good news, signs of hope, signs of health. San Francisco State University professor of holistic studies Ken Burrows assembled last year's chapter. Sarah Van Gelder of Yes Magazine has long been helpful and supportive of us. Mickey Z, Rebecca Solnit, many people are writing about good things that are going on and commons heritage things that are going on. And we like to support people nominating these kinds of stories, too, so that we can help build up our confidence and help build up our own local support systems so that we're not overwhelmed by the many problems in the world. And again, you know, you and I know, Stephen, and your listeners know there are so many problems. It's so easy to get overwhelmed looking for this information and then finding out what to do with it. So, again, I urge all of your listeners to not just support independent media, but really try to become part of that media. And if Project Censored can be assistance, it can be any type of assistant in that process, we welcome nominations. We welcome feedback. You can contact us through the website. And again, people that would like to criticize the things we do, we welcome that. But please be constructive. You know, there's too much of this violent name-calling and ad hominem red herring type of attacks and things that go on in our culture. We really need to help each other, and we really need to work together, or else we really have no hope for the future.
Well, we need to bond, Mickey. There's no question about that. And talking about being overwhelmed by all going on, it certainly overwhelms me. Again, I just immerse myself in it every single day. And it bothers me so much to see how it's like a cancer, and that's the way a guest who comes on this program occasionally, and he'll be back. He was on recently. He'll be back next month. And he literally describes what's going on as a malignancy, a societal malignancy, and it's eating away at us, and it's destroying us.
No, I agree with you, and I think, you know, we do need to immerse ourselves in the deconstruction of these problems and understanding of these problems, but I think we need to come up for air, and we need to try to figure out what to do about it. And if these vehicles, like in media reform, the FCC, if these vehicles no longer are working, it's insane for us to continue to try to use the same tools that are failing us. We need to become more independent in terms of our information, our critical thinking. You know, the anarchist feminist Emma Goldman once said, the most unpardonable sin in society is independence of thought. And we really need to foster that in our institutions, in our schools, in our lives, in our homes, in our communities. And again, I think that really portends well to supporting the commons heritage ideal, the idea that knowledge, we don't have ownership of knowledge and information. We need to share it with each other. And, I know that you're going to continue doing what you're doing. I hope we at Project Censored can continue what we're doing. But my ultimate wish would be to put myself out of work as the director of Project Censored.
Oh,
where we could have
absolutely.
A society where we would no longer need Project Censored.
Maybe before I pass on, and I hope I have a lot of good years left, maybe I'll be able to put myself out of business and finally be able to retire.
Well, I'm working very hard to put myself out of a position as the director of Project Censored, where Project Censored will be in a culture where, again, it isn't needed. We really will have a vibrant free press. We really will have an open and transparent government and public institutions that we can trust and that we can, you know, go forward to try to, as some of our Enlightenment friends used to say, live the good life.
Oh, indeed. So, Mickey, you mentioned before we went on that you have a meeting you have to run off to.
Yes, I do.
Final thought, and I'll let you go.
Yeah, just, my final thought is, again, it's just one of appreciation. You know, I wanted to thank you for what you do, thank PRN for what they do, thank KPFA Pacifica for giving us the opportunity to have a show to talk more about not just, again, the problems, but solutions, and to let people know what's going on in their communities so they can act and feel more self-empowered about coming to collective solutions. And I urge all of your listeners to please visit our websites at projectcensored.org. We appreciate any support we can get, and if we can work in concert with any other individuals and organizations that might be out there listening now, again, please feel free to contact us. And looking forward to coming back on with you sometime, Stephen.
Oh, absolutely, Biggie. I'll send you an email. I know you got to run off. You can catch up with me when you get back. You know,
sure.
You have 100% support from me.
Yeah, much appreciated, and thanks again to all your listeners.
Thanks, Mickey.
Take care.
Well, some final thoughts for me. I've immersed myself in so much. It's some rare moments like this when I have a chance to mention some of the things that I get involved in, and also that I keep a blog site, which anybody can access simply by Googling my name. I Google my last name, or Steve Lenman, and it takes me to my blog site. And I didn't set it up to be a blogger. I set it up simply to have one place where I can keep all my articles chronologically, which is what it is. And everything I write is stored there chronologically. It gives me a chance to go back and review things. If there's information in them relating to something new that I'm working on, I hope listeners will go to the site and take a peek. You can see the broad array of topics that I get myself into. Recently, I've been heavily on the Haiti story. I mentioned it on Thursday, the fact that the despot for 15 years showed up supposedly unannounced. Well, I'm talking about baby Dr. Valier. Well, he may have been unannounced to the general public and to people like myself. But there's no question what is going on beneath the surface we have to guess at. But there's no question that he did not come back to pay a visit, and he did not come back to face charges. He came back because Washington and France together arranged for him to come back. Now, what they have in mind, we'll have to wait and see. It certainly is up to no good, but what it is precisely, who knows? I put out an article today. I quoted law professor Francis Boyle. He believes that France and Washington brought him back to reestablish his dictatorship. I mean, that really seems like a stretch, but you never know. There's no question that Washington does not plan democracy for Haiti. It plans despotism. It seems a bit of a stretch to bring back an old despot. Why don't just put in a fresh despot before anybody knows he's a despot? But who knows what'll happen? This guy, by one report I read, besides murdering tens of thousands of people, torturing all the rest, may have stolen up to $900 million. Well, 15 years is a long time. You can steal a lot of money in 15 years. And there's a lot of ruckus about $4.6 million in a Swiss bank. Pocket change. For him, pocket change. He'll give that back. He may give back pennies on the dollar just to make it look good. But how much do you need? The New York Times actually had the audacity to write an article that maybe he came back for financial reasons, saying, I just glanced at it. I saw the headline. I thought, my God, what on earth are they writing about? This guy needs money. He's been living in luxury in a French villa. He didn't come back for money. And if he ever needed money, he doesn't have to come back to Haiti to get it. I mean, he has friends in high places who can get him all he needs. But of course, he has all he needs, even after apparently a nasty divorce settlement. I didn't follow that and really have no interest in it. But the Haiti story concerns me greatly. Jean-Bertrand Aristide very much wants to come back for health reasons and to be able to be back as a private citizen to help the people of Haiti. The people of Haiti need so much help. They needed it before the January earthquake a year ago. They need it more than ever now. Between the earthquake, where virtually nothing of consequence has been done to help the people since the earthquake, the rubble is still there. Most of the aid never showed up. People have contributed good money to Haiti. It's been stolen. It's been stolen to use for corporate development, to give to predatory NGOs who come there not to help Haitians, but to rip them off, including some very big names. Think of some big NGOs that you can imagine and understand that they're not for real. They're in it for profit. They call themselves nonprofit. They're in it very much for profit. The heads of these organizations make big, big salaries, like corporate CEOs. Maybe not multi-millions, but a lot more than most people listening to this program. It's a very, very sick, dire situation. But you've got Haiti, you've got Iraq, you've got Afghanistan, and you've got what's going on here in this country. Literally a plan to destroy the middle class of this country. I don't exaggerate saying that. It's well along the way. And the plan literally is to get rid of it entirely. So we have a super rich and a fairly rich and everybody else exploited with few or no benefits, getting rid of Social Security, literally, getting rid of Medicare, literally, getting rid of Medicaid, literally, doing it slyly, cleverly, backdoor, saying we can't afford it. You'll hear the talk, you're hearing it now. It's all a lie. How do you know when politicians are lying? You know the line. When their lips move, they all lie. Doesn't matter who they are. They all lie. Oh, I wish we had more time. Do join us Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back on tomorrow. Ellen Brown is back tomorrow. She absolutely does some of the best financial writing I've seen anywhere. She'll be on to talk about her latest writing. Do tune in.